pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Major Clarkson there will make a presentation.
Thank you. I hope you, most of you have your red badge there in front of you with a few goodies there.
Thank you.
And we have one more thing I'd like to give you. Captain, who is the captain of our Red Shield Center over in South Modesto, has a personalized card for each of the supervisors as well.
Please.
Can you jump? Oh. There you go. Something you can pin on your wall. Note that some of the people out there who are watching you are actually supporting you. I would imagine sometimes in political office you never know quite for sure whether people behind you are chasing you or supporting you.
Short.
All right. Just have a couple of words I want to make, and then I want to introduce a couple of folks. Thank you first for the opportunity to be here. And I want to tell you that the Salvation Army has been serving the least and the lost for almost 150 years, beginning in 1865. 100 years ago, when the founder of the Salvation Army was on his deathbed, he was interviewed by the London Times. And he was asked, Reverend General Booth, will the Salvation Army survive after you're gone? And to the reporter, he responded, that depends on the Salvation Army. If the Salvation Army continues to preach the gospel, love the unlovable, feed the poor, and help the homeless, even the devil himself can't stop it. But if the Salvation Army stops or ceases to preach the gospel to the lost, love the unlovable, feed the poor, provide hope to the homeless, it does not deserve to survive. Well, that was 100 years ago in 1912. So the Salvation Army is alive and well in 124 countries around the world, and especially here in America, in Modesto, and Stanislaus County. What does the Salvation Army do? I want to make a pledge to you who are the officials, the Board of Supervisors, and the staff of the County of Stanislaus, what the Salvation Army is doing and who we are. First, in any given year, the Salvation Army in Stanislaus County serves daily meals to tens of thousands of hungry, needy people, which include both sit-down meals and boxes of food for families to take home and eat in their own homes. The Salvation Army gives at either no cost or virtually no cost food for over 35 local food banks in Stanislaus County so that they can serve those who live in their neighborhood, either to churches or community organizations. The Salvation Army provides a clean, warm bed and a hot shower to over 100 homeless every night, in which they also receive, and this may seem a little superfluous, but it's not, a clean pair of socks and clean underwear every night. And I reminded our board at one point of the Salvation Army that that was good, and they said, well, I said, don't you change your underwear every night? And he looked at me, and I said, well, never mind. Let's move on to another subject. The homeless do. The Salvation Army provides character-building activities for at-risk children and youth at the Red Shield Youth Center every day, where thousands of young people come in to find a safe haven and hopefully a way out of drugs and gangs. The Salvation Army provides a meaningful and successful transitional living to over 100 people each year, 40 at a time, to enable men and women who are tired of living homeless, who are tired of being on the street and have said, I want to change. So we provide a means of counseling and training and placement to help them find a suitable place to live, a livable income, and their own homes and hope for the future. The Salvation Army provides a child development center for over 60 young children to help them prepare to successfully enter kindergarten in the schools and to help their parents have a time to go to school or to find a job. The Salvation Army spends thousands of dollars every year to pay utility bills for people. And I can tell you story after story out of men and women and families in our own county who go without electricity, without heat in the winter. And the only way that it comes back on is when the Salvation Army will pay their bill. The Salvation Army stands ready in this county in case of emergency or natural disaster to help with lodging and counseling and hope for any who are distressed. The Salvation Army provides a spiritual anchor to many who are lost in the world to find hope and peace for the future. Just this week, tomorrow actually, the Salvation Army is also opening a free medical clinic for the homeless. You may have seen something in the newspaper of that coming out, but it officially opens tomorrow to provide, you know, medical care for those who are in need. And I thought a year or two ago that when you asked homeless what they needed the most, they would tell you that what we need the most is a place to stay, we need a job, and so on. But you know what they really responded? Medical care and dental care. That's what we're providing. In the words of our founder, William Booth, who once said, "While women weep as they do now, I'll fight. While little children go hungry as they do now, I'll fight. While men go to prison, in and out, in and out, in and out as they do now, I'll fight. While there remains one lost girl lost in the streets at night, I'll fight. I'll fight to the very end." To you, Board of Supervisors and staff, we of the Salvation Army pledge ourselves to fight to the very end. And we appreciate your support. I'd like to introduce a couple of folks. Our Captain Martin Ross, call it Captain, just who recently came up a year ago from Southern California, is now the captain in charge of the Red Shield Youth Program and Corps down in South Modesto, a place, as many of you know, is a place of great risk for many children. We also have our advisory board chairman, Pete Nicolini, who is here. Stay here. Who, as a volunteer, has chosen to help the Salvation Army and help lead us through all that we do. So I'll open it up. Pete, would you like to say a few words as well?
A very few. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity here. You know, the Salvation Army is organized so that support that's given from its community stays within the community. So your support, the support of the people of Stanislaus County, really goes to help those people in Stanislaus County that have a need. We have a responsibility to take care of these people. And through your continued support and the people of Stanislaus County, I think we're making headway, and I think we're very successful in our efforts. We have a long way to go. There will always be people out there in need, and I think we've all made a commitment to help those people. Thank you.
Well, as sort of a newbie to the Modesto area, with my wife, Catherine Torrey, we want to just say this is an outstanding community. We've been many, many places, and there's lots of folks that put their hands to the plow, so to speak, to make things happen. But for a smaller community compared to Los Angeles, I think Modestoans put their hands to two plows. Okay, so you guys are doing a great job, and we're so glad to serve and glad to serve with our other folks here that are representing the Salvation Army. And we want to just continue to be saved, to serve, and to just do what we do, because that's what God called us to do. So thank you all for your support. We hope you enjoy the cards from the kids. They put their best in those, and I appreciate your support. We appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Will someone step forward? I'd like to make a presentation, a resolution. Well, thank you so much for all your contribution. The one thing that's quite evident is not only do you have an organization, but you have the input of the public, which is always the volunteers that make things work. And it is our pleasure as a member of the Board of Supervisors to present you with a resolution, which is a proclamation for May 9, 15, 2011 as National Salvation Army Week. I'm not going to read it all, but I am going to read a couple of lines which I think are extremely important. Whereas the Salvation Army has been provided spiritual guidance and basic human necessities to millions of people for over 120 years. Whereas a love of God and a deep desire to help others is the motivation behind the men and women of the Salvation Army. I will not read the rest, but I will conclude with, "Now, therefore, be it resolved that Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors does hereby call upon all citizens of Stanislaus County to join in supporting the work of the Salvation Army and does hereby unanimously proclaim May 9th to 15th, 2011 as National Salvation Army Week in Stanislaus County." Congratulations, and thank you very, very much. I don't know if you wish to say a few more words, but if you wish, you're more than happy to extend this.
Thank you for your continued support. This is quite an honor and a privilege, and thank you very much for your support.
Well, thank you. Now is the time for public comment, and we have Miguel Donoso.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the Board Supervisor. I'm in behalf of Mr. Delma Taka. I'm passing right now this letter. They're going to the Attorney General from the State of California regard to the abuse or the power abuse from the Sheriff's Department in regard to the killing of the Mrs. Rita Elias. So that's the letter they're going to be sent today to the Attorney General. At the same time, in regard to my personal view, I very strongly believe the same thing as Mr. John Mataka, that we are requesting personally that the investigator from outside of the county to come investigate the abuse or the force in regard to the, not only the killing of this lady, but at the same time many abuse from the department or the sheriff's department in regard to the many unconduct for many members of the sheriff's department. I'm not saying that all the members are the way. There are few are doing different jobs they're not supposed to do, and for us, many times specific minorities and Hispanics descent. So, in behalf of Mr. John Matata and myself, we want to do that petition to you, sir, member of Board Supervisor. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Are there any others in the audience who wish to speak at this time? If not, we will close the public comment period. We will now go to the consent calendar. Are there any members on the board who have comments or questions?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Second. Seconded?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. We will now go to the scheduled matters. That's 9:05 on subject A, which is approval to introduce and waive the first reading of ordinance to establish new and amended existing fees of the Department of Parks and Recreation.
Good morning, Chairman Montes, members of the board. Sonia Herbfeld, Director of Parks and Recreation. Just stop and think for a second. Excuse me. The item before you this morning is a proposal for not only new but also to amend our existing fee schedules. These fees impact our four regional parks, which are Frank Rains, LaGrange, Modesto, and Woodward Reservoirs. Annually, the Parks Department generates approximately $1.9 million, which helps to pay for the operation and maintenance of these regional parks. In addition, Frank Rains and LaGrange received grant funding from the off-highway vehicle grants, which also help to offset our operations and maintenance, and also pays for special projects at our two off-road vehicle parks, both LaGrange and Frank Rains. In preparation of our proposed budget each year, the department evaluates the cost of the services that it provides and reviews the associated fees. The evaluation our evaluation for our proposed budget for 2011 and 12 indicates that we need to increase our revenue by approximately $200,000 to stay within our proposed budget. The Parks Department has seen increased costs of doing business. This includes the increase the increasing cost of the sheriff's patrol, our workman's compensation insurance, retirement, plus the proposed loss of about $800,000 in our general fund revenue. Our fees were last raised in 2004. For the past several years, the fee structure has included some discounted or, in some cases, free admittance to our parks, as well as free camping for certain categories. This proposed fee structure eliminates free entrance or free camping at our regional parks. Now what I'd like to do is to just kind of go through some of the proposed changes that we have. Probably the most significant one is our current fees for the 100% permanently disabled veterans and POWs is free at this time, and what we are proposing is that they will pay 50% of our proposed fees. The permanently disabled persons currently receive a 50% discount, and we're going to there's no change in that fee. Current developed camping is $17. We're proposing to raise it to $20. Full hookup camping is currently $23. We're proposing to raise it to $25. Additional vehicles at a campsite, we had a wide range of fees from $3 to $23, and we're proposing 50% of the camping fees. So it would be 50% of whether it was a full hookup or a developed campsite. We also have a holiday, an additional fee for holiday weekends. Currently that's $2, and we're proposing to raise that to $5. Youth camping will go from $7 to $10. Senior camping would go from $8 to $10. Senior camping with full hookup would go from $10 to $15. Day youth senior fee would go from $3 to $5, and the same with the vessels. We have a recreational hall up at Frank Rains, and the current fee for that is $65 a night, and we're proposing to raise that to $75. We have a waterfowl hunting program, and we have a draw annually, and we're proposing to raise the waterfowl blind permit from $275 to $300, and then we're also proposing to raise the deposit from $75 to $300. And the reason being is we've had some issues out over the last few years in with people leaving anchors out in the reservoir, and it takes quite a bit of staff time for us to go out and retrieve those, and we think that $300 will be more of an incentive for people to remove their blind anchors than the $75 was. And that will be, you know, it will be refundable. So as long as they do what they're supposed to do, they'll get their money back. We're also proposing to change the camping fees at the off-road vehicle parks. Camping will go from $14 to $15, and full hookup will go from $20 to $25. We're also proposing to raise the extra vehicle, and this is strictly related to not an off-road vehicle, but an extra vehicle at the campsite. And I just want to make that clear, because off-road vehicles pay $5 to go and ride in the park. And we're talking about someone who comes in with an extra car associated with motorhome or an extra vehicle at the campsite, and that will be the same as it is at our reservoirs, which will be 50% of the camping fee. We're also proposing a day use surcharge of $5 for holiday weekends, not the 4th of July, but other holiday weekends. And we're also proposing to have the day of the fireworks celebration at Woodward would be a $20 day use fee. Group camping would be we're proposing a group camping fee of $60, a reservation fee, change fee of $15, reservation cancellation fee of $15, and then we're also proposing an annual pass fee of $75, which is the same annual pass rate as at Modesto and Woodward Reservoirs. We're also proposing to delete some fees, walk-in and bicycles. We had a $2 fee. Undeveloped campsites, we're proposing to delete that fee and deleting the undeveloped campsites for seniors, and then there were no other changes to the remainder of our fee schedule. We conducted two stakeholder meetings on February 22nd, or 23rd and 24th. The meeting on the 24th was also held in conjunction with our annual grant meeting that we have to review projects for our off-road vehicle parks. As a result of those two meetings, we did make some minor changes based on the comments received. I did take the proposed fee schedule to the Parks Commission on March 10th, and they moved to support the proposed fee schedule. Public notices were printed in the Modesto Bee on April 29th and May 5th. The proposed fee schedule was also posted on our department's website on April 26th. Staff recommends to introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to establish new and amended existing fee schedules for the Department of Parks and Recreation, and if approved, we'd like the fees to be effective June 10th. And at this time, I be happy to answer any questions.
Any board member have any questions?
Sonia, we're deleting the undeveloped campsites. Can you explain why?
Yes. Because of the limited amount of staffing that we have available to go out and do field collections, we've noticed over the past couple years that people come in and they'll pay the undeveloped camping fee, and then they'll end up actually staying in a developed campsite, and we just don't have the staff to go out and do the field collection like historically we have done, you know, in the past. And so for us, there's not that much difference in the fee, and so we are proposing just to eliminate it because we feel that, you know, we have so many more. We added 122 developed campsites out at Woodward during the last year, and there's no way that we can get around and do the field collection, and we feel that eliminating the undeveloped camping fee is appropriate.
And on the vehicle, you charge per vehicle, no issue on how many people are in the vehicle, right?
No, it doesn't. They can come with 1 or 15 in a car.
Interesting. And so on 4th of July, they'll come with 15, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
But I see that as advantageous for us also, limiting car traffic in there. I mean, the people want to come enjoy, and if they come 4 in a car versus 2 in a car, it's probably a big advantage for safety.
Well, and also, if anyone is wanting to observe fireworks at Woodward Reservoir, I would strongly recommend that you arrive probably before noon, because I think we were at maximum capacity of about noon last year on the day of the celebration. So.
Yeah. And I'm just going to state that I'm going to support this. I know it's been since 2004 since we've done this, but I just want the audience to realize that about half of what the expected increase in, and that's nothing's assured, is going to ensure that it's still a safe family environment up at the reservoirs in the OHV park, because of the sheriff's patrols. So,
Supervisor Withrow.
So just real quick, I want you to address what we talked about a little bit here. We're talking about having to raise fees and doing everything we can to try to, and I don't want people to think that all we do is just raise fees. I want you to explain, it was a consent item here that flew right through there, but maybe just throw out there other creative ways you're looking to bring in revenues on this sale of harvesting of the grass and hay out there was one of them. I thought was a good idea.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we did this fall was we put a proposal out to have to see if there was an interest in anyone coming out and harvesting the grass. And as everybody's well aware, we had a wonderful rainfall this year, and so the grass was really quite tall out at it. And we anticipated that it would be quite tall out at Woodward Reservoir, and so we solicited bids from the local farmers and ranchers, to see if anybody'd be interested in maybe possibly paying us to have the ability to go out and harvest the hay out there. And we were successful in getting a bid in doing that. And so we're also looking at another option, possibly working with SSJID to possibly do a no-till farming operation out there to increase the quality of the hay that's available and subsequently hopefully get a little more money than the $7.50 a ton that was proposed.
It accomplishes a couple of things. Not only do we generate revenue, but you guys usually are expending money to cut that back for fire.
We still have to cut some fire breaks, but it reduces the amount of labor that my staff has to do because once they've gone through and swathed the area, the stubble that's left is only a couple inches tall, so it significantly reduces the fire danger out at Woodward. And it also reduces my staff. Because when they go out there and cut, my staff doesn't have to spend as much time mowing the sides of the roads and a variety of different activities that we usually undertake during this time of year. And so it's truly a win-win situation for us. It reduces our labor, and we actually end up getting a little revenue. And so it's kind of a good deal.
That's a great deal. Thank you.
Any other board member have any comments? If not, I'll turn it over to the public to see if you have any comments on this issue. If there are no comments, I'll bring it back to the board.
Motion to approve.
Pardon?
Motion to approve.
Motion approved. Is there a second?
I will second it.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. We will now go to schedule item. Yep. Matter B, approval to introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to amend transfer fares for Stanislaus County Transportation. Brad Christian.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. I'm Brad Christian. I'm the manager of the Public Works Transit Division. With me today is Annette Borelli from our staff, and we're here to request a fare increase for the Stanislaus Regional Transit, or START, bus system. It's been 3 years since we had our last fare increase. As noted in the staff report, one thing I'd like to point out is through our increased ridership and timely fare increases, we are the only operator that has not requested a, let me put my glasses on, a service-wide exemption or a lowering of its state fare box from STANCOG. We have always made our 10% fare box, and our ridership has gone up over 20% over the last 5 years. The primary reasons for the fare increase are increased contracted costs. We contract out to a private contractor, which includes fuel for the dial rides, size buses. We all know what's happening with fuel. It's filling up. And increased labor and insurance costs, and we need to make our mandated 10% fare box. Now, just a quick explanation of what the fare box is. It's the relationship of the fare revenue collected from passengers to our operations costs. We are required to basically recover a dime on every dollar of our operations costs because we are a non-urbanized operator. We have less population density, so that's what our requirement is. As you can see here by the blue line, if we do the proposed fare increase, we anticipate we will continue to make our fare box through 12-13. As you can see by the green line, if we don't have the proposed fare increase, we will not meet our mandated standard, which could result in a penalty to us. Here's quickly what we're proposing for our, for our fixed routes and runabouts, fixed stop services, these are the fare proposals that we are requesting. Some of them are going up a quarter. But one thing we are doing is we're going to continue to offer a 10% discount for general fare, ticket books, and 20 ride bus cards, a 15% discount for students on our 20 ride student cards, and a 40% discount for seniors and persons with a disability on the 20 ride cards and the 20 ticket books. The fixed route services for services for seniors and persons with a disability fares will not be going up, nor will the cost of a 31-day general fare pass. That's, you know, to help encourage ridership in our system. For runabout shuttles and dial rides, fares will be going up 25% in all of those categories. And just to kind of explain what those are, our runabout provides what's called deviated fixed route service. It can both have fixed stop service and it'll deviate to pick people up at their houses too, like a dial ride. And then our inner city dial rides, that's like our East Side shuttle and Modesto Turlock shuttle. And then the dial rides are Waterford, Modesto, and Patterson dial rides that we operate for those cities. On our Medivan, which is our Bay Area non-emergency medical transportation to the Bay Area, we're proposing a dollar increase for each way, and then if there's an attendant that is going, that'll be going up a dollar each way too. And then our Route 70 bus, which is kind of a commuter run to and from Merced, that'll be going up a quarter. One thing we are going to be doing to encourage the use of public transit, right now we have a quarter charge for our transfer from one bus to another. We are going to eliminate that quarter. So it'll be free transfers between our systems and other systems. When it comes to comparing the proposed start fares with other county inner city transit operators, I think you can see that our fares are still quite reasonable. But when I made a comment earlier to someone that you'll be able to go from Dustine to Oakdale for $1.50 in our county. So it's very, very reasonable. For inner city curb-to-curb services, which once again are like our East Side and Turlock-Modesto shuttles and our Waterford-Modesto runabout, you can see here that they are very reasonable when compared to other county services that are very similar. And then finally, on our intra-city dial-a-rides, which are our Newman, Waterford, and Patterson dial-a-ride, here's the comparison, and I think they compare very favorably. We have done very extensive public outreach regarding this fare increase. It's been discussed at various meetings at STANCOG. We held four public meetings out in the communities. Press releases were done to all the local papers. Information was available on our buses, on our website, and people could comment through our toll-free 1-800 customer comment line or our START website or any of the public meetings, and we have yet to receive any feedback on this. So I think it kind of shows that these are pretty reasonable. So, with that, staff is recommending that you approve the introduction and waive the first reading of an ordinance to amend transit fares for Stanislaus Regional Transit for START, and find and determine that the proposed ordinance is not subject to the California Environmental Quality Act, Public Resources Code, Section 2100 at SEEK. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from any board member?
Yeah. You say that you received no comments from the public at all about this increase?
None. No.
Well, it still is a pretty good deal. So we lose 90 cents out of every dollar we spend on this, so it's a pretty good deal. Then the ridership, you said that it was taking some notes, it's up about 5%. From what time? From a year ago?
It's gone up 20% over 5 years.
Oh.
Yeah. Actually, last year, the economy did hit us a little, and we dipped a little bit in our ridership, but, we're back up over 7% this year. So we've probably had the highest increased ridership of any operator in this county over the last 5 years, percentage-wise.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever look at using smaller buses sometimes if you don't have much ridership? I've see some of those buses coming from the west side. There's very few people in them sometimes, where a bus half the size might be more efficient.
Well, it becomes an economy of scale. You want to have all one fleet, and actually those buses are very full coming from the west side in the morning, but then when they're returning back maybe later in the morning, they're not going to have that many people. In the afternoon, it's kind of the reverse, where they're very full going back to the west side, but then heading back to Modesto, there aren't many people on it. It's just kind of the nature of our business. My wife and I were in Beijing, China a few years back, and there's actually empty buses in Beijing, China. So it kind of depends on which way the bus is going as far as the pattern of the commute. Because we're an intercity service, we have that ebb and flow.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I would personally like to commend transportation in Stanislaus County in the last several years addressing the needs of the seniors and disabled. And we've had an excellent program. We've had the seniors and disabled involved in it. The volunteerism has stepped up, and without all of their help, Catholic Charities and numerous other groups that have helped us, we appreciate that help, and I think we're going forward in meeting those needs that perhaps weren't filled at the time. But absolutely have plans in addressing it, and I think we are being very successful in addressing them. So I want to thank you.
Thank you.
A comment? Yeah.
Just one last thing, Brett.
Sure.
You said that if we don't hit the mandated fare box, there's penalties.
Yes.
And what does that involve? How much are we talking about? What are they?
Well, it depends on, let's say we're $10,000 short of collecting enough fare revenue to meet our fare box. Basically, we would have to come up with the $10,000. And chances are that would, as of right now, any excess local transportation funds, LTF, is divvied up to streets and roads for road repairs. That money would have to come from the county's share of the streets and roads. So that's why it's important that, you know, we make our fare box. There are a few operators that are in trouble in this county, and they may have to cough up some money from their coffers.
Okay. Thanks.
If there are no more questions, excuse me.
Yeah, I would like to ask, some of the providers have asked for relief from Stancock, the exemption. What does that entail? Because they're going below their 10%, or they're not 10% because they're not non-urban users, right?
Well, some are 10%. Two of them are small urbanized operators, and they're at 15%.
15%. But when they ask for the waiver, then they're picking up a smaller percentage, less than 15%, 14%, 13%. If the waiver is granted through Stancock, are they exempt from paying back that portion?
If they have an exemption, then it means they do not have to make their fare box ratio, and so, yeah, they do not have to cost that up. What has happened is most of those exemptions have expired, and so now you have some operators that are in trouble, basically, and they will probably have to cough up some money in the future from their local transportation funds.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I know we've done a great conversion on our buses from diesel to natural gas. I know it comes at a huge savings in fuel right now. Can you give us some indication of...
Yeah, and that's a great point to make. Unfortunately, our smaller dial-a-ride size buses, because they don't have the range for us for CNG, we have to go with gasoline in order to meet the air standards. But all of our 40-foot buses, our 10 buses, are CNG, and we saved over $350,000 over 2 years during the last time gas really peaked. So it was a big, big savings to us. Instead of having to cough up more money because, like, diesel had gone way up, we actually saved $350,000.
And cleaner burning.
And much cleaner burning, yes. It's been a very good decision.
Thank you.
I'm going to jump in there. It was before my time, so to convert to that, what was the cost to convert to that? And then,
well, because Public Works has the CNG infrastructure fueling station, that's where our buses fuel, that was a separate grant, so that was in place. But the buses, right now it's about $50,000 more per bus for a CNG versus a conventional diesel. But it's getting to be less because a lot of the diesel buses are now having to put, well, they have to meet air standards too, so a lot, they're having to put scrubbers on and all kinds of stuff. So a bus that might have cost us $450,000 for CNG was roughly about $400,000 at the time for the diesel. But we funded those 85% with federal funds, which we were only able to get because they were clean air buses. So it was very minimal investment for the county.
Okay. Great, thanks.
You're welcome.
Is there any other comment? At that point, I'll turn it over to the public. If anyone wishes to make a comment on this subject. That's fine.
Are you over Dallaride then? Just Dallaride or Modesto City Bus?
No, we're over the county bus system, not the Modesto bus system. Modesto Dallaride and the MATS bus system are run by the city of Modesto. We run the START buses, the red and white ones. So we don't run within Modesto. We bring people back and forth into Modesto.
Excuse me, may you state your name, please?
I'm sorry. My name is Loretta Carhart.
Thank you.
That's the main reason I was asking, because I didn't know if you were about the Dallaride buses, for instance, all over Modesto, all over Ceres and all.
We have a bus that goes between Ceres and everything. Ceres
goes up and down.
Right, right. We go between Turlock and Modesto with our type of service.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you. If there are no further comments, bring it back to the board. Ask for a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve the staff recommendations.
Second that. There's been a first and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed.
Thank you.
Let's go back now to B5, approval of an agreement between the Community Service Agency and Valley Recovery Resources of Silver Living Environmental Services. Patty Hill, or again, this.
We'll bring our PowerPoint up. Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. I'm Patty Hill Thomas, Chief Operations Officer. With me at the table is Jan Viff, our Assistant Director of the Community Services Agency, Kim Martinez. Also joining us in our presentation today will be Madeline Schiffler, our VHRS Director. And there'll be members in the audience, including John Grover and Tom Ciccarelli, who wish to address your board. You can probably feel for me how important this is. It is an honor to be here today to be a small part of this presentation. This is truly a story from the heart, and it's very powerful. Margaret Mead once said that a small group of thoughtful people could change the world. Indeed, that's the only thing that ever has. And indeed, I think that's what you're seeing today. This is the story about a group of people in our community deciding to make a difference. To make a difference, in some cases, for people that they'll never meet. That making that difference at a time when the public resources and private resources as a result of our economy and our nation continue to shrink and continue to present very troubling fiscal outcomes. This is a unique partnership. We're going to hold off on that slide just for a minute, Kim. This is a unique partnership that we're presenting to you today. It's about making a difference for families in need in our community. What's important about the technical part of this story is that it is about leveraging local private money for the public good. And that's really, really important. Chairman Monteith, you spoke in your State of the County speech about a time to build. And you talked about the irony of that in such a tough fiscal time. You called for a time for a new season to begin, a time for members of the public and non-governmental organizations to work with their county government to step into leadership roles to provide essential services to the public. Before you today is just such a partnership. And before we get into the details, I want to take an opportunity to recognize the extraordinary efforts of Supervisor O'Brien. I'm pretty sure it was Christmas Eve morning and we were talking on the phone. And there's, I think, a story there because in my view, personally, as a veteran in this community's organization, this is about a gift. It really is. And Supervisor O'Brien championed an idea that we really hadn't talked about here before. It was an idea about people in the community who were willing to step up again, as we've seen them do over and over and over again, to help nonprofit organizations or faith-based organizations or other community organizations. And the idea was pretty simple, amazingly. If that money, that privately donated precious money, were brought to the county government in a partnership, couldn't we draw down state and federal money, particularly for child welfare services, that our county government can't afford to match any longer? I'm quite certain that Supervisor Brian was struck by a number that I think probably struck us all at the beginning of last fiscal year when we presented to you the final budget and we only could recommend the minimum match dollars for mandated programs. And we essentially left on the table at that time over $12 million in state and federal funding for all social service programs, not just child welfare, that our community really deserves. But because we're a low property tax dollar county and all of the other fiscal realities that we and you face, we couldn't match and bring those state and federal dollars here. Supervisor O'Brien, you connected a group of people that are marvelous with a county team, and you gave us the inspiration to do something very different, and that's what's before the board today. So we thank you for that on behalf of all of us. This partnership before you today will leverage anonymously donated funds to important child welfare programs. We're going to show you a series of building blocks now in this next slide that really illustrate what today's action is about. You see that it starts with a county match for mandated programs, and our county has only been able to fund the minimum mandated match. So we get only to those basic allocations for state and federal dollars. But when donated funds come in and they take the place, which is appropriate under the state and federal guidelines, to leverage those maximum child welfare allocations, those augmentation dollars are now obtainable. And in our county, just for the short period of time that remains for the current fiscal year and all of next fiscal year, those dollars, additional dollars that this donation and this partnership bring will be between $1.9 and $3.3 million for community programs that we would have no other way to achieve. This is about leveraging those depreciously donated dollars, and it's about a multiplier effect. So before you today is a recommendation to contract with Valley Recovery Resources, but we also have an important recommendation to authorize us to bring back a plan to use those funds that are now achievable to restore and shore up some critically needed public services in the child welfare arena. This is not a government-only approach. It is truly a county and community approach. I talked a little bit about that multiplier effect, and Jan, in a moment, is going to talk to you in greater detail about what it does, not only in the recommended contract with Valley Recovery Resources, but in other community programs we foresee in the whole area of clean and sober living and recovery. Before I turn it over to Jan, I want to take a moment, though, to also thank the county staff from the Community Services Agency, the County Council's Office, the CEO's Office, Behavioral Health and Recovery, and the Auditor Controller. Everyone put on their Let's Be Creative hat to bring this forward today, and I appreciate their efforts. But most importantly, I'd like to personally thank the members of the community. Some are here today, and some of whom we will never know who they are, for making this possible. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Jan Viss, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board. I'd like to read a quote. Quote, "What seems to us as bitter trials are often blessings in disguise," by Oscar Wilde. Stanislaus County Community Services Agency is the department that is mandated to provide child protection services. The child welfare system is complex and must adhere to specific laws and mandates. We investigate child abuse referrals and take action based on a variety of safety and risk factors. When there is child abuse or neglect, we may work with the family with the child remaining at home. If a child cannot safely remain at home, Child Protective Services will seek a protective custody and search warrant to remove the child and then initiate court intervention. We provide court-ordered reunification services designed to help parents reunite with their children when they have been removed by the court. If that is not possible, a permanent plan is established, adoption being the most permanent plan. Over the years, Child Welfare, along with its partners, have knit together a safety net to effectively provide prevention, intervention, and treatment services for children and their families in our community. Stanislaus County is unique in the strong partnerships we have and a true sense of shared responsibility for the most vulnerable children in our community. With the reduction of local discretionary funds, Child Welfare has seen reductions in staff of approximately 28%, in addition to significant reductions in contracted services over the last 2 years. A total of 23 social work positions have been unfunded, in addition to a variety of support staff. A number of contract positions have also been eliminated. This fiscal year saw a loss of 10 contracted positions, including public health nurses, a mental health clinician, domestic violence counselor, alcohol and drug specialists, and a deputy sheriff detective. Contracted services that were eliminated included clean and sober living facilities and differential response. Differential response utilizes community-based family resource centers to respond to child neglect and abuse referrals to the hotline that do not meet the criteria for a CPS response. Contracts that were reduced also included clean and sober living facilities, substance abuse treatment services, counseling, and parenting programs. What is the impact? One area is an increase in the number of children we've seen entering the foster care system. In April of 2010, 558 Stanislaus County children were in foster care. In April of 2011, there were 622 children in foster care. We attribute these increases to the lack of community resources and staff to safely keep children at home. For example, the ability to provide a clean and sober living environment to a woman participating in treatment allows her to be in a safe, supportive environment and able to care for her children while she receives the help she needs. We believe the loss of clean and sober living environments has directly resulted in the increase of children entering the foster care system. Another significant impact is the reduction in child abuse prevention services. Differential response has assisted in reducing our reoccurrence of abuse rates, yet it is not a mandated program. In proposed budget, we have $2 million of local match. Some of it is realignment, some county general fund. This allows us to access $10.3 million of state and federal funds for a total of $12.3 million for child welfare services. The actual total child welfare allocation identified by the state for Stanislaus County is approximately $14 million. Through a variety of partnerships, we have identified $298,000 toward this gap. This still left us $145,000 short of accessing $1.3 million of just basic allocation funds. Once this basic allocation is fully matched with the local funding of $2.4 million, augmentation funding requiring no additional county share is available to the county. This translates to an optimum budget of between $15.9 million and $17.3 million. Knowing we have child welfare funds available, we began seeking creative ways to use other funding for local match in order to bring much needed services to our community. The first partnership was with the Family Justice Center.
With a donation of approximately $75,000, we are able to match child welfare dollars for staffing and operating costs at the care center, which is housed in the Family Justice Center. We will be entering our second of the three-year plan with the Family Justice Center in 11-12. This donation leverages to a total of $400,000 for support to the care center. Our next strategy was utilizing a grant from the Stewart Foundation of $23,000 to match dollars to provide educational support services for foster youth. This is a four-year plan, and this donation leverages to a total of $133,000 a year for educational support. Then this year, the Child Abuse Prevention Council, which has oversight for the Children's Trust Fund, developed a five-year plan of $200,000 local match annually to draw down child welfare services allocation to bring back differential response, an important prevention program in the community. This is a five-year plan and was developed in November of 2011. This donation leverages to a total of $667,000 after matching with state and federal funds. This plan, however, still left us short $145,000 of local discretionary match to get to the augmentation dollars. In December, a group of individuals from the faith and business community who are committed to clean and sober living contacted Supervisor O'Brien about the use of privately donated funds to leverage unused child welfare dollars for clean and sober living programs. These individuals formed a new nonprofit called Valley Recovery Resources. About the same time, Laura's House, which provided clean and sober living for 15 women and their children, had to close their doors. Redwood Center, which housed 25 women and their children, were also experiencing financial hardships due to the loss of child welfare funding. Valley Recovery Resources was able to purchase the Redwood Center facility from Interfaith Ministries and will be able to maintain this clean and sober living environment and provide services at its current capacity to serve 25 women and their children to a maximum of 40 women and their children. Valley Recovery Resources will be donating a total of $159,000 towards clean and sober living. The county has already received a donation for the remainder of this year and has received a pledge of up to $145,000 for fiscal year 2011-2012. This donation leverages to a total of $482,000 of child welfare funding. StanWorks will be providing an additional $321,000 for total annual services up to $803,000. In addition, this is the final building block that unlocks the augmentation dollars. And what does this mean to our community? Due to the lack of discretionary local funds over the past 2 years, our safety net has been compromised. The partnership with Valley Recovery Resources will continue the much-needed clean and sober living environments for families. In addition, it's the final link for child welfare to fully access funds available to provide child abuse intervention and treatment services in the community. This will allow us to add back needed community services and case management staff to support families and children that was previously reduced due to no local match. So on behalf of the Community Services Agency and specifically Child Welfare Services, we are deeply thankful to Valley Recovery Resources and the community for understanding the need and providing the resources that will benefit the most vulnerable in our community. Evan?
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doering. In the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. I think we've heard a lot of that, and Albert Einstein was not incorrect in that quote. This quote applies both to the individual level and to a broader group level. On the individual level, we have been talking about sober living environments. I think that many people have turns in their lives. For some, that's because drug and alcohol has been a problem and become a big issue in their lives and that they need to get clean and sober. The sober living environments are often paired with treatment, and we've found in more recent times that that's become a very effective way to provide treatment for alcohol and drug use, as well as being a cost-effective strategy. That in a cost-effective strategy as opposed to residential treatment in long-term situations, so that individuals can be in treatment, and then when their treatment ends, they are able to remain in their sober living home until they're ready to go out on their own. And some people do choose to do that. Sober living environments provide a structure that many folks that have addiction issues have lost track of. There are responsibilities they have abandoned in an effort to continue to abuse drugs and alcohol. So having an environment like this where it's very structured, where they are required to attend AA, the 12-step meetings, AA or NA, they are required to do chores and take care of the house. Women living there can be there with their children in many of these instances, especially the one that just was mentioned, Redwood Center. And they also learn to be a parent again. So having these resources is terribly important, and they encourage a substance-free lifestyle. And they provide opportunities for individuals who are struggling to maintain sobriety to share that with others as a support group and be able to stay in sobriety. There is a bigger picture, however, to the quote as well, and that we've heard much about. Ms. Hill-Thomas has already spoken about the community becoming involved. And we ourselves at Behavioral Health and Recovery Services have been experiencing what we call adaptive dilemmas over the last couple of years, in which the cost of providing services is going up. The need for services in behavioral health is going up, but our funding is going down. So we have the dilemma presented to us that our strategy of just cut, cut, cut no longer works any longer. So we have turned to the community in a community stakeholder process, which we began last year to deal with our alcohol and other drug budget deficits. And this has resulted in a wonderful collaboration with our community. And I think that this example today is just one concrete example of what can happen when that kind of collaboration occurs and is successful. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to answer any questions that you and the board may have, and I'd also like to introduce Mr. John Grover and Mr. Tom Ciccarelli, who are in the audience today and would also wish to approach the board.
Any questions on the board? I have a question. First of all, I want to praise the community that stepped forward. And yes, this is what I was asking for in many ways, and they've been more or less the leaders in this area. This covers the extent. Can we continue this momentum? How does the, is this contribution, how long does it last? I mean, does, let's say we run a long period of time where we don't have this money available from government, how do we figure the longevity and the maintenance?
The specific recommendation before you today will go through next fiscal year, through the 11-12 fiscal year. As you know and are well aware, many programs, including many social service programs, are often on the chopping block in Sacramento. However, child welfare programs have also been considered protected, and not many reductions have been proposed for child welfare. There certainly haven't been increases. So this particular contract before you today will go through the remainder of the current fiscal year and through all of next year. For next beyond, for the 12-13 fiscal year, we'll be issuing requests for proposals to the community and looking for more of these types of partnerships. to sustain and grow and build this kind of community approach to clean and sober living.
Okay, the reason I ask is it doesn't look like we're going to be in any better shape for some time, and to all of a sudden say the county should take it up, we're not going to be able to do that. That's merely what I'm asking, and that is not... I want to thank those who stepped up and are taking it on, and so what you're asking is the community to step forward, continue on with the program, my understanding. I just want to make sure that we start a program, and then all of a sudden, for some reason, the monies aren't there, then the county's asked to pick it up, and we don't have the money. And but that's not belittling what you're doing. I just wanted to bring that up so it'll be a continuation of the community participation.
I just might add that your board has a no backfill policy, so the county has never been able to pick up this difference.
Well, that's what I want to make people aware of, that perhaps are listening and are not aware of the fact that we are confronted with that challenge, and it's always been there. So, and I'm pleased, do not take this wrong in any matters. I do just want to praise those who've stepped forward, and we thank you. If there are no other questions or comments, open it to the public. If anyone in the audience would like to step forward, and please state your name.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board. My name is John Grover. I live at 4300 North Avenue in Modesto. I'm a board member with Valley Recovery Resources, which is a 501c3, has been stated. I'll repeat a few of the items you've already heard. But it's newly formed to help provide clean and sober living for women that are struggling with drug and alcohol addiction. I've personally been a part of this community for 56 years, been a business owner here for 32 of those years, and have been active in a number of civic and not-for-profit organizations, as many of the people on our board involved in this effort have been as well. The group I represent today consists of members of the business and faith community who learned late last year, as Patty Hill Thomas said, that Laura's house had closed. And we also learned at that time that the Redwood Family Center was in danger of closing as well due to the economy and budget constraints that so many face today. So we recognized and know that there's a significant need for the services that we're talking about, especially now, especially in light of the economy and what's taking place there. So we're also aware that there's kind of a declining option available to you at the county to deal with these things. So given the kind of collective heart and interest that this group has and had at that time, we came together to try to figure out what we might do as citizens to help our community. And part of that, of course, was finding and obtaining donations for the matching grant. And are real pleased that there are people in this community that feel this strongly about these programs to contribute their own funds to do this. I think that our efforts over the past several months have been a great example of public-private partnerships that ultimately improve the quality of life for people in our community as a whole. And I would like to particularly commend and thank Supervisor O'Brien, Patty Hill Thomas, Jan Viss, and I'm sorry I don't know everyone's names, but all of those that work so hard on county staff at the county level to make this happen. We too often hear the negative about local government and government in general. And I really want to commend everyone that's worked on this for their hard work, their integrity, and the things they've done in creative thinking to make this happen. I'd like to thank also Interfaith Ministries. Tom Elrod is here today, the chairman of the board, for the hard work they've done at Redwood Family Center over the years. They've done a wonderful job, and we're very, very hopeful in the transition from their oversight of this program to Valley Recovery Resources. So we're going to keep working hard as a community and as a board to continue raising funds from the faith community and from the business community to continue the program. And we have in place a very, very solid board of directors, a very experienced staff, and we believe a community that will rally behind us and continue to provide funding and support for this effort. So I would ask for your support today in what we're doing by voting in favor of this contract today. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to come forward?
Good morning to you all. My name is Tom Elrod. I'm the board president of Interfaith Ministries. And just wanted to share that approximately 8 years ago, the Redwood Family Center opened its doors to women and their children who were in need of help to overcome their addictions. In a very short order, after seeing the impact that Redwood had on the lives of the women and children, Redwood became known as the place where miracles happen. Over the last couple of years, in spite of our best efforts at Interfaith Ministries, the economic conditions became such that Interfaith was forced to make a very difficult decision. Do we continue to serve the approximate 20,000 people annually through our food pantry and clothes closet that was established approximately 35 years ago here in Modesto? Or do we serve the 150 women and children annually through Redwood Family Center? Because we, as the board, looking at all of our options, we realized that we could do one or the other. If we attempted to do both, we could do neither. And we are in a difficult situation. We can now say that Modesto and Stanislaus County are where miracles happen. It's truly a miracle, I believe, that private, public sectors come together for the better cause of the community. I believe it's unprecedented that in one community, various churches with varying beliefs and dogmas came together to form a single nonprofit that in turn was established to collaborate with a completely separate nonprofit, being Interfaith Ministries, as well as government agencies to continue vital work to continue to serve those in need in our community. Because of the open minds and open hearts and open pocketbooks, annually 150 women and children will still have a bed to sleep in. They'll have care for their children. They'll have food to eat. They'll have the transportation they need, as well as the resources they need to help them recover from their addictions and become thriving members of our community. And just on behalf of the entire board and staff of Interfaith Ministries, we just say thank you to Valley Recovery Resources, to the involvement of the county, to the Board of Supervisors. Again, it's truly a miracle that something like this, that looked like it was ready to be completely eliminated, was able to come together through various forms and continue the great work that was started approximately 8 years ago. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to come forward?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Tom Ciccarelli, 2387 Parkwoods Way in Oakdale. Still consider myself a Modestan and certainly a member of this county. In these conversations, we've heard about another group called Recovery Modesto, and I just want to talk to you briefly about that because this is something that's been in the works for about a year and a half. We were approached by a young man by the name of Reuben Imperial from Behavioral Health and Recovery Services that came to Pastor Scott Miller at Big Valley Church and myself and said, we have some of our people attending Celebrate Recovery, which is a program at Big Valley Church, and if we have clients that wish to pursue that option, a faith-based option, would there be other opportunities maybe to spread Recovery Modesto throughout Stanislaus County to give other geographic opportunities for people throughout the county? And so we set upon the three of us having breakfast once a month and talking about the possibility and what that has really morphed into through collaboration with other people that have come into the effort in public meetings is Recovery Modesto. And we see Recovery Modesto in terms of this Redwood operation as kind of an umbrella that's going to provide ancillary services, life skill kind of things that are coming out of our churches. People that are sitting there hearing the gospel mandate every Sunday from their pastor about helping those that are less fortunate to come into this process and really help the women and children at Redwood Family Center with life skills. And so, as John said very clearly, this is truly a miracle in my eyes. And I would like to thank Supervisor O'Brien for your leadership in this. But I'd also like to thank Mr. Robinson and the CEO of your office and your staff, the staff at Community Services Agency and Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. You know, it's one thing to come up with an idea and a concept.
it's a whole other thing to put the pieces of the puzzle together and make it actually come to fruition. And this would not have been possible without your leadership and your staff. And so we want to thank you, you know, from the bottom of our hearts for allowing your staff to pursue this in a very creative fashion to make this a reality. We're actually starting a website for Recovery Modesto, and the phrase, the vision statement is discovering the life you were created for. And the picture shows a person that is obviously in addiction and needs to change their life. But there's also another part of that. There's a lot of people that are in churches and faith communities that need to discover what they were created for in this life, and I believe it's to serve God's people. So on behalf of them, the people that you'll never meet, thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to come forward? If not, I'll bring it back to the board and board's wish.
Mr. Chairman, I have a few comments. First of all, I think the bottom line we need to look at this proposal today is the fact that the Redwood Center stays open. There's a place where women go not only to beat their addictions, but they do that while keeping their children with them. And after Laura's house closed and the writing was on the wall for Redwood Center, it was amazing to see how this all came together. I remember the first phone call I got back in December, and I think it was Christmas Eve. And I apologize for bugging people on their vacations and all the rest, but the important part is we got it done. Not only is Redwood Center going to stay open, but the people who work there also will keep their jobs. And then the bigger picture is the drawdown monies and additional funding that we get will allow other people to keep their jobs and further the help that we're providing people who are in need. It was very creative, and I appreciate all the kind words today, but I'm not the one who gets the credit. I just happen to be there to help put those pieces of the puzzle together. The big thanks go to three groups of people, and one is the donors of the money, the people who put up their private dollars. Two are the fine people at Valley Recovery. Without them, we couldn't do this. And finally is all the staff here at the county, from the CEO's office all the way down to our departments who spent a lot of time putting this together. I appreciate all the time, all the meetings, all the phone calls to make this happen. And the end result is we're going to continue to do some good things for people who are in serious need, and we're going to leverage those dollars to make them go as far as we can. So, you know, to the three groups of people, thank you so much for everything on this.
I'd like to comment because I every time there's a great idea, there's usually 10 reasons why it won't work and three or four why it will. And Supervisor O'Brien, it's a matter of, you know, as an elected official trying to put those pieces together and pushing the puzzle forward, and I think you're being modest, but the community, we live in a great community. I don't think anyone's ever overestimated our community. We are great from the word go. The way people come together in these times of need, and I thought it was very fitting today that, you know, we're honoring Salvation Army, Interfaith Ministries, Valley Recovery Resources, because government can't be all things to all people. We see that. And we talk and talk and talk about thinking outside of the box. We talk and talk and talk about, you know, doing things differently with public, private. But it's very difficult to bring it together. So my hat is off to our staff, Jan, Marilyn, you know, Patty, but to you guys and Supervisor O'Brien for pushing this forward. I do appreciate it. I know that there's going to be a tremendous benefit to the community. So thank you.
Supervisor Blitzer.
First, again, this is the accountant. I always the accountant has to have to say something about the numbers. What a great investment this is. You know, it's just an unbelievable investment. And I want to thank Bill and all the staff for everything they've done with this. You know, when you look at it as an investment, it's there's a multiplier effect to this. And, you know, that as I first come on the board and started here, I see how much money the county, how much of tax dollars are spent as a result of drugs and alcohol addictions. I mean, I would say the majority of what we spend, whether it's in public safety, you know, CSA, everything is, as a result of that. And so to invest in stopping that, the multiplier effect, that the return that we're going to get, the return the taxpayers are going to get from that is unbelievable. And the return in our community what we can get is unbelievable. Having as many people, I'm sure, having personally dealt with addictions in my family personally, you can see how devastating it is to a family and what it does to kids. And if we can break that chain, you know, we can change a community. Just in a 10-year period, you can change a community by breaking that chain. So what a great investment, what a great thing to do, and I commend everybody involved. So.
Supervisor DeMartini.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, in a time of diminishing government resources, it's really refreshing to see organizations like Valley Recovery Resources, and along with their donors who want to remain anonymous, to really step up to the plate and help us continue this vital service. I've been to Redwood Family Center several times through the years, and I find they do a great job in helping women who are addicted, mostly to methamphetamine. The ones I'd talk to just get away from that and start taking care of their children, and it's really a valuable service. I can't thank enough the county staff and Supervisor O'Brien, along with the donors whose money helps us leverage state and federal money for child welfare. Breaking that cycle and keeping this program going is going to have decades of benefits for the children today who grow up into adults in a lot better atmosphere than they would have otherwise. So I thank everybody, Supervisor O'Brien. You're, I think, a little modest there. I really appreciate your effort on this. And then not to diminish the hard work of the county staff who put all this together.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve all five staff recommendations.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
This time we'll go to correspondence.
This board has received three letters from the United States Department of Interior regarding the proposed California Foothills Legacy Area an easement program to protect working landscapes focused on rangelands surrounding the Central Valley and the proposed expansion of the San Joaquin River National Wildlife Refuge Area.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development and the Agriculture Commissioner, Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received from the Gallo Center for the Arts the projected budget for fiscal year 2011 through 12, leases, prices, concessions and fees exhibit and the schedule for the 2011-12 season.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office.
And this board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Recommend receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. At this time, does anyone on the board have a report or wish to make a report? If not, then a legislative, physical, and management report from Chief Executive Officer.
Yes, I do have a couple items. So the very first thing that I would like to do, I didn't want to interject during the presentation that you just heard relative to the Valley Recovery Resources and the Sober Living Environment Services, but I personally want to thank Patty Hill-Thomas and Supervisor O'Brien, who took an idea and molded it into something that became a reality. It absolutely could not have been a reality without the faith-based community and the business community stepping in to support the effort both financially and with their human effort. But you know, behind every great effort is an orchestrator, and we had two of those in this case. Both Supervisor O'Brien and Patty L. Thomas for outstanding work in this. On the legislative and budget front, obviously any hope for a state early budget solution has been dashed, and we are now in the in an environment that we are used to being in, which is a little hope for an early budget solution. And June 15th, which is a state budget deadline coming upon us very quickly, we understand that additional discussions around the realignment concepts that were floated by the governor are going to be underway in the near term. Hopefully we'll be able to see some positive solutions come out of those discussions. As we have expected, we are in a very difficult circumstance in Sacramento at this time, as the political parties have polarized, and so very little is being accomplished relative to the long-term strategy and solution that we so desperately need as a public agency so that we can conduct our own business. Hopefully things will ease in the days and weeks ahead. Lots going on the federal level as well. The feds, as you know, are debating increasing the debt ceiling and or significant deficit reductions, budget cuts that could have some long-term implications on some of the very programs that we're talking about today. However, at this juncture, we are facing the same types of challenges we are in Sacramento, which is partisan politics that are affecting anybody's ability to get anything conclusive accomplished and allow us to move on with our duties and responsibility to deliver services in our community. One final note, I did receive a request that I'm following up on now to use our Crow's Landing air properties for certain recreational uses. That's been a challenging issue. I've been looking at it for over a week now. We have many, many obstacles, perhaps some opportunities as we look at another variation of public-private partnership, but we'll continue to work on that. I may or may not have something to bring to you at some point in the future with a recommendation. We do have to respect that the highest and best use of that facility in the long term is as a jobs creation operation, and so we're going to respect that and respect the farming operation that is currently ongoing on a vast majority of the property that is part of the former Crow's Landing Naval Air Base, as well as the agreement the reuse program between NASA and the County of Stanislaus, and the property is still held in ownership by NASA. But we are working through that request. Don't know what the outcome will be. However, we'll continue to keep you abreast of any changes or recommendations.
This brings this meeting to adjournment.